When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So here we go again, round and round and round on the garbage contract in the French Quarter. The city goes out for a one-year emergency contract for sanitation services, and it seems as though IV Waste is the winner of that contract. You know the owner, Sidney Torres. His bid of $5.9 million was the lowest among the four bidders, and he claims that he will begin service on December 23rd. However, we have two lawsuits, I think, that are being held or being heard, or two claims that are being heard this morning in civil district court. And I guess what is going to determine a lot of this is what happens in these lawsuits. Judge Paulette Irons will hear arguments in both cases, and we're not clear exactly how this is all going to align with this contract that we have. I've talked to several folks in the administration, in city government, and they tell me that Torres is going to have the contract for a year. So we'll see how all of this aligns. It's important. Again, though, why is this so difficult? It's amazing. In the emergency contract, we were able to have everything laid out. Bids came in, make the selection. Doesn't seem like that there's a big issue there. Whereas before, we had all the time in the world and nothing but problems. So Henry Consulting, one of the litigants this morning, is asking the judge to move forward with this contract. And he's also challenging the council's authority to approve professional service contracts in the first place, which we know how that all came about. Obviously, he's not happy with that because you only have to make one person happy, the administration, the mayor, that is, as opposed to four members of a council. And then obviously the remaining one by Mr. Romelli, who came on the show, claims the administration improperly expanded the scope and value of the Henry Consulting contract during post-award negotiations, which are always problematic as well. Because if you need more scope, put it in the original RFQ, RFP, right? Don't wait till afterwards and then increase the scope, depending on who wins, right? And that equates to what? Yep, you got it, more money. And here we go again. And it's interesting, it looks like they, obviously, although the council doesn't have to vote on this, it looks as though they would get the lion's share of the votes, IV Waste, that is, who is the largest trash holder in the city and services about 70% of the locations outside of the French Quarter and the DDD at the present time. So this company that most people are familiar with in the aftermath of Katrina and the work that was done is actually in the garbage business. They actually own something. You know, those things called garbage trucks. They actually have those, which one would think would be a reasonable expectation of a responder to a bid for garbage removal. One would think that. Probably one would have that experience in most other cities where similar services are put out to bid. But no, not in this city. There's actually not a requirement that the primary bidder, vendor, actually own any garbage removal equipment. You can just go in with a shell and then outsource everything, and we all believe that that's a good way to do business in this city. I don't get it. Why add multiple layers where you have parties who can then disagree? Oh, really? That can happen? Well, it's happening right now. I mean, this is craziness. Not to beat this thing to death, but I mean, you know, this is an indication of where we find ourselves, where there's a breakdown in governance, where you're looking at a business cycles, and how you're going to procure services here, which is one of the primary functions and responsibilities of the city. And you would think that they would be looking to act in the best interests of the city in how they do this. And you would think that they would want this more direct line or connection to the vendor from administration to the actual individual that actually has some trucks, right? You know, those things they call garbage trucks, you know, the thing that they throw the garbage in the back of. Be interesting. Maybe we should show the city pictures of what we're talking about and where, you know, these companies that bid, that maybe they should have some of these and they should put together a pictorial attached to the RFQ, RFP to say these are the items that we're talking about that you actually have to prove some ownership of, that you actually have. And you've actually operated these. You actually have employees that actually get behind the wheel of this truck, and you do recognize that they go down the city streets and they pick up garbage cans. Now, it's a shame that we have to get that elementary on this show, but it serves as a reminder to those in the decision-making process at city government that this is what you ought to be doing, is to have that direct line to the individuals that are actually providing the services, that you don't have to go through someone else, and then they end up in an argument separate and apart from the communications with you. You don't hear anything. You're not a party to it because you're not a party to the contract between them, the sub, and the prime, and you're sitting on the sidelines getting the complaints from John Q. Citizen about your garbage not being picked up, and you are what? Impotent. For those of you that don't know what that is, you can't do anything. You're done. You're out. You're sitting and waiting for other people to decide what's the best way to resolve their conflict. Meanwhile, the hue and cry from the taxpayers out there, the rhetoric's rising, the heat's rising, the garbage is stinking, and they're fighting. It's a great model. It's a wonderful model. Maybe they'll learn an important lesson here. I doubt it, because this goes on and on and on and on. I mean, the level of incompetence as it relates to the procurement of services and just being aware of the primary functions and responsibilities, it never ceases to amaze me on so many different fronts. Another good example of this is, situation with the school board. Not necessarily the settlement. There was an employment contract they wanted to get rid of. Superintendent Dr. Avis Williams, obviously, they didn't even realize that they were overstating their revenue. Their revenue comes from the millage that you pay on your property, right? This is really hard to figure out, right? So you go to the assessor's office and you ask the assessor for their roles and what they sent to the collector, the Department of Revenue, for the city of New Orleans who's going to generate the property tax bills. And you ask for the summary report of how much that generates. You then look historically to see what percentage of the total amount of taxes historically are actually collected in a given year. And that's going to give you a pretty good feel for where you're going to be from a revenue perspective, the largest line item revenue that you have in your budget. And then you can figure out how you're going to budget those dollars from there moving forward. There are grants and there's other things that you're going to get money from. And, you know, there may be some of these schools, some kind of fees and stuff that generate income for you as well. But basically, that's it. Well, the CFO hired by the CEO doesn't tell the CEO, according to the CEO, that they had overstated that amount. They had actually budgeted too much in expenditures, and they don't have the revenue to support what they actually budgeted in expenditures. Here we are. We're through the year. Oops. Houston, we have a problem. Right? Primary function of what the CEO does. In fact, in her contract, it actually says that this is some of her duties. To mind the ship relative to finances, which is, you would expect to find that in any CEO's contract, right? So here we are, we're trying to bring an end to this agreement, and it's got another year, I think, on the agreement, and now we have this secret settlement of $335,000. So the settlement itself is not what's really, the barn burner here. That's not what this is really all about. What they don't want is they don't want their dirty laundry being aired. Because the CEO is going to say a whole bunch of things about the board, about the lack of resources, about this, about that, and everything else. The board then is going to say that they have a bad hire, that this individual, the due diligence that they did in the background of this individual is not up to snuff. She failed the students and the parents and the board and yada, yada, yada. So it's in their best interest to just move on and in the agreement basically say that they have nothing bad to say about each other. In fact, everything's rosy with the exception of one thing, that she could never work for the district again in case some other idiot is sitting over there and decides that maybe we would want to try her again, which don't put that out of the realm of possibility. I could cite a couple of examples of that actually happening in the city already. So we're all up in arms about this. And the only thing about the transparency is really not the terms and conditions of what was in the employment agreement. It's really about them airing their dirty laundry. What is it that they're hiding? What is it that they know? And what is it that they don't want you and I to know? And I have to suspect that it's probably a lot. So they hurry up and they confect this agreement. The confection of the agreement is not out of the ordinary when you have employment agreements that you're going to terminate early. It's all of the details that support why they're doing this. And we still don't really have a clear answer as to how this debacle even occurred. And how we got to the point where we are already. So here we are with two different scenarios, and last week we talked about a third with the RTA and providing transportation for the disabled population. And some of the comments that were made by the CEO there, who actually had the audacity to ask the board to hire a coach to coach them and teach them about what they're supposed to do. Interesting. And these are the folks that we're hiring. And we wonder why we find ourselves in a predicament that we find ourselves in. Maybe we should pay attention. Read the tea leaves. They're pretty revealing. And find out about these folks. And maybe get more probative. Why you're there. Why certain things are being done. How they're being done. And maybe you'll become a better fiduciary for the public. But this is in a span of 3 weeks. We have three major organizations caught up in governance deficiencies. And we wonder why we find ourselves in the position that we find ourselves in. It's absolutely amazing. And in the end, we're just paying more money, more money, more money, more, because we've got nothing but money. How many times have we heard, it's not a function of money, it's a function of execution? It's amazing. For the longest time, it was about the money. Now we got the money. Now it's about execution. And we got a lot of money under the Biden administration, under the Inflation Reduction Act and everything else. But you got to be in a position to receive the money. What does that mean? You got to know what to do with it. You got to know how to handle it. You have to have the governance infrastructure and the execution in order to make something good come out of the money. Because the money sitting in the bank is not necessarily good. Could be great. But unless you execute on the spend, on the procurement, you're dotting every I, crossing every T, you're meeting the timelines, you're doing it in an effective way. And unless and until we get to that point, it's not of much value. And this continues on and on, on and on. I was just listening to Eugene Green in an interview with Tommy Tucker. Now, I like Eugene Green. I think he's well-intentioned. But you know what I don't like is when there's this mindset about the constituents of this city having a complaint about driving down their streets and seeing a homeless camp that's full of garbage, collection of bicycles and other materials and stuff that they're going to ultimately bring to the salvage yard. Grocery baskets, I don't think they belong to the homeless. I think it's a pretty safe assumption it belongs to some retail outlet that then becomes their mode of transporting all of these goods that they're collecting, that we have to put up with panhandling at all of these street corners, right? Burning incense at one of the corners now, right? It's become just this big show. Then the sideshow is the public urination and defecation on the sidewalks, seen it all. You know, the blocking of the main travel portion of the roadway and those sleeping on the sidewalks. And it's almost as if they're wanting us to feel guilty about demanding more. That we don't understand the homeless population. I don't need to understand the homeless population. What I understand is the what, the outcome. I don't need to understand the why. I need to understand the what, the outcome. Why do they get to choose when and how and why and where they're going to set up camps? I don't get to choose when and why and how and where I want to park. There's sanctions. Something as simple as that. When I visit downtown urban centers, there are places that I can park and places that I can't park. If I put my vehicle on the neutral ground of Canal Street, guess what? There's going to be a sanction. However, if I put a tent on Canal Street, there's no sanction. There has to be an understanding that I'm living in an urban populated area, this thing called a city. And as a result of that, I have to be more empathetic and sympathetic to the plight of the individual that put the tent there, as opposed to the person that put the suburban. Now, this to me, this is pretty basic. And it seems to be that no one's really understanding what this is all about. There are just a couple of things that we need and we desire. I don't know. It's interesting about where this is going to go. But now I have to feel guilt about demanding more? That this is a normal occurrence. And this is what Councilman Green said. It's a normal occurrence when living in urban populated city. You think maybe that's why there's been a flight to the suburbs? I wonder. You tell me. When we come back, we'll go to the talk lines, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us.